And add to that list as well, bottom of the hour, Gerard Gallant, former NHL head coach, future NHL head coach, and current Canadian men's national coach for the World Championships. Welcome to Hockey Central, Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne. Plenty to get to from last night, specifically the Leafs and the Habs. Touch on Vancouver, Ottawa again, and McDavid. As we look to the hunt for 100 points, and we keep saying, nah, he can't do it, as casually puts up a three spot against the Winnipeg Jets. Ain't no big deal. Quentin Byfield makes his debut last night for the Los Angeles Kings. We will get into all of these topics. Meanwhile, gentlemen, good afternoon. Start with the Leafs and the Habs. 4-1 victory for Toronto. In the process, they clinch officially a playoff spot. Auston Matthews with his 35th goal of the season. Let's start on that one, Justin. I know you like to talk about technique a lot, and Stewie, you do as well. 35 goals for number 34. I don't know who was more surprised about that play, Auston Matthews or everybody else in the world.
Yeah, what's funny is, like, there's no, like, technical analysis to be done of, like, weird greatness, you know? Like, that's just, like, a hand-eye coordination level that I can't comprehend. But it's not just, like, that he does it. It's like he's thinking about what comes next. He's not just trying to calm the puck down. He's trying to calm it down while batting it past a player. Like, the way he sees the ice, well, with all the going around him is incredible. But, like, for some reason, the puck doesn't bounce for him. It's like everyone else uses a tennis ball and he's got a hockey ball. Like, it always just sits flatter and easier for him for some reason. It's incredible to watch.
Yeah. What'd you make of that, Stewie?
Yeah, it's definitely an amazing play. And I don't know if he was surprised. I think he was more like, hey, I'm the man. Look what I can do. But the one thing I think is everyone can agree on, in 3-4 years down the line, he's going to be doing some more amazing things where this doesn't look that impressive compared to what he can do. It just seems every single month he does something that's just amazing. But it's plays like this where I think he gets put into the conversation of best player in the world with Connor McDavid. Is Connor McDavid probably ahead? Probably slightly. But Matthews just proves why he's in a great talent, not just in the North Division, but the whole league.
You know, someone pointed this out to me on Twitter this morning, and it's a really good point. If you go back and look at that goal, and I don't know about you guys, but I've watched it probably about 20 times already. If you go back and watch it, once he gets the puck past Suzuki, right before he shoots, Shea Weber extends his stick to try to poke it away from him, and Matthews. And again, Borny, this goes to your point about, like, there's no breakdown. This is just like an elite level player, like, doing elite level things instinctively. Does, like, this little toe drag around Shea Weber's stick before he shoots it. Like, all this, by the way, we timed it yesterday. Our producer for Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey, Matt Marstrom, timed this. So from the point of knocking the puck down to it going behind Jake Allen and hitting the back of the net was 1.33 seconds. So in 1.33 seconds, he knocks down the puck, settles it, to your point, Justin, it's heavier around Auston Matthews somehow, gets the puck around Shea Weber's stick, who's extended out for a poke check, and fires it past Jake Allen, who doesn't have time to fully set in his butterfly. All of that in 1.33 seconds.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where once you've knocked the puck down and put it into sort of a position where Weber might be able to reach it, the only thing you can do is fling it on net. And there's no player in the league flinging it on net outside of Ovechkin that I'd have more confidence in scoring than Matthews. Like, he just knows how to whip that puck hard into the right spots. I don't know if he aims for a quadrant of the net or a pinpoint area, but my God, does it find spots.
And Jeff, have we actually seen a camera angle yet that actually shows the puck going in the net? And the hand is definitely quicker than the eye, but I don't think I've seen one where you actually see the puck going in the net. Do you?
I haven't seen one. No, he just fires it. And then it's in, the red light goes on.
Is this the conspiracy theory? It just never went in.
Did the puck go in the net?
The puck is still on. He's like an illusionist. The puck is actually still on his blade somewhere.
He's David Blaine.
Pulling doves out of his sleeves next as he's going down for a rush. Okay, so just in general then, I mean, the Auston Matthews goal is a spectacular one, and it's one that we all look at and say, well, that's the one highlight we're taking away from that game. But what about the game itself, Justin? Like, was it ever, in your mind, was this one ever in doubt? Like, it's always tough when you come, that first game when you come back from a road trip is always hard. Montreal found themselves, you know, clawing, scratching, you know, trying to salvage their season on Monday. They did. By beating the Calgary Flames, they come back at home. It's almost as if you can predict that there's going to be a little bit of a there's going to be there's going to be a lag for the Montreal Canadiens. But how did you? I don't want to bias you here. What did you think of the game last night?
Well, I'm already biased because I heard Elliot Friedman make this point last night just about schedule losses, and this really does fall under that category. As a team, you never accept that. You never say, tough road trip, we're finally back home, it's okay if we're not great tonight. But it is a spot in the schedule where you can see that, understandable, the guys are going to be a little worn down. This condensed schedule, they're playing, finally back home. The effort, it's not even criticizing the effort. Like, some days you just don't have the gas in the tank. You want to go all you can, but you just don't have it. And it looked like that out of Montreal to me last night.
Stewie?
Yeah, it just seems like there's two teams going in totally different directions. And Montreal, they just can't put the puck in the net. If Toffoli's not doing what Toffoli does, and that's putting the puck top shelf, they're really, really struggling. But I think that just shows how important a player like Gallagher is to this team, not just offensively, but just dragging the team into the fight. The team just seemed like it had more jump and more oomph and more tenacity with him, too. But I think with Toronto now, they're sort of now figuring out the formula of what makes this team successful. You have to have one of the big, four stepping up. The power play can't kill you. You got to get solid goaltending and the bottom six stepping up. So if they keep playing games like this, I think that's what's going to make them successful, going into the playoffs.
Have to have a thought about Rasmus Sandin here. And, another real smooth game from the defenseman, a game with a little bit of bite as well. The borderline hit on Jake Evans, to which, if I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs, I'd rather be called a little bit dirty than a whole lot soft. How, Justin, did you read Rasmus Sandin's game last night?
Well, he's taking good steps. I thought it was interesting that he played comparable power play minutes to Morgan Riley last night. Like, they're clearly giving him some window of opportunity to show what he can do in those situations. So it's great, and I totally agree with your point. Like, you don't want to see him shirking from physical opportunities and rather maybe erring on the side of a bit too much sometimes. So this is a good sign. And, man, he could make things really interesting for the decisions this team has to make as they head into playoffs.
Sure. Stewie?
Well, I do, Justin. I do remember you calling for Sandin to take Riley's job on PP1, but we'll get into that debate later. But
I don't think
I think I saw that episode of Tim and Friends. I think you were one of the friends saying that. Maybe it was another friend, but I think with Sandin, like, it's tough. It's tough to come off the couch, not playing a game for a year, and get thrown into a situation. I'm just happy that they're not giving him garbage time. We played 18 minutes the other night, too, and I'm just surprised by his physicality. We know he's a rough and tumble guy, but to get thrown into this scenario in the late season where it's big boy hockey, he doesn't seem out of place. So I think now, him being a first rounder in the draft 2 years ago, he's now earning his opportunity. They're not handing him anything, he's earning it, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him now have a fairly decent playoffs and get into that top four next year.
Hey, Stewie, how much do you see someone like him getting opportunity as a young guy and kind of resent the way you were used earlier in your career? Like, if you were put in a better spot.
Dude, I hate it. I got sent down 9 times, and it was like, Stewie, great job. We'll see you next time. It wasn't go down there and work on what you need to work on to be a full-time NHLer, and that was part of being a pro. You got to figure it out. But, the cap era now was you have to have guys, that are entry-level that come in and make an impact on your roster. But me being a first-rounder, I got that opportunity. I know nothing's really given to you, but just a fair opportunity to show what you can do in 15, 20 games, playing some top line minutes.
The interesting thing about Rasmus Sandin, too, it's a special player for management. Rasmus Sandin was the first ever draft pick by Kyle Dubas. He was the assistant before when all the other picks were made. This is his first. And at that draft, in that Maple Leaf spot, they moved their pick to trade down. Like, apparently they wanted Rasmus Sandin the whole time. A lot of teams had Rasmus Sandin in the second round. Now, albeit high in the second round, but they had him as a second rounder. Dubas traded, swapped picks with St. Louis, picked up a third, which they turned to Semyon Dragushensev, and got the guy that they wanted. Semyon Dragushensev, Peterborough Pete's, SDA, as they call him. You just call him still.
Yeah.
Just call him SDA.
I know him now.
Make it easier. Highly skilled player. Anyway, yeah. real skilled guy. So they pick up an asset in the process, and they get the guy that they were after. Knowing how much teams, and specifically general managers, will value their first round picks, I can't help but seeing them giving him every single opportunity. Like, he's going to play the rest of the regular season. Like, get this guy some minutes down the stretch, probably rest some dudes as well. But it does look and feel very much like this guy is going to be given every opportunity to give the Toronto Maple Leafs the luxury of having an option if things get difficult re-signing Morgan Rielly. Agree or disagree, Justin Bourne?
Well, that's, I think what Stewie is referring to is a J.D. Bunkus original. The, the Rasmus Sandin could take over for Morgan Rielly, take the torch from him. You know, that we always run the risk of not appreciating the players you have, and it's a very real risk, and I think that's potentially what's happening here a little bit. But I think the Leafs are in a unique salary cap position where they got to give Zach Hyman more money for the same player. He's going to cost millions of more dollars. It has to come from somewhere. And is it going to be Freddie Anderson? And if it's not Freddie Anderson, where else can you look? Rielly is kind of the next guy. Like, if Sandin's awesome, you can say, hey, this guy could play PP1. He can play in the top four. You know, you like that you have Brody, Muzzin, and Hall. Maybe you can have that conversation. It's certainly relevant. And people who get their backup to it, this is one of the conversations the team's having. You know, is this a place where we can find our money?
But I think you can develop him and turn him into a top-end defenseman. Look at all the other defensemen that are in the league, young guys that are sort of going through these growing pains, and they're just thrown into that fire. Guys like Heiskanen and Quinn Hughes is not doing well defensively, but they're just, you know, throwing him up into their Shabbats, playing, you know, 25, 26 minutes a night. Rasmus Dahlin. So these guys are going to have natural growing pains. And not saying that Sandin's as talented as some of these guys, but if you put him in that top, you know, 2-3 role as a defenseman, he's eventually going to turn into a PP1 guy. You got to give him that, but you got to have now that system and those line mates that are going to insulate his weaknesses. So I think with Sandin, you put him on a top pairing, you leave him there, eventually he'll turn into that top guy, I think.
We should probably mention Jack Campbell here. And I know it wasn't the a quote-unquote Jack Campbell game where he's the center of attention. That's probably a good thing. 31 saves on 32 shots. You know, there are a couple that look real challenging. A couple you say, okay, well, that's a great save by Jack Campbell there. But it wasn't as if Jack Campbell went into Montreal and stole a game for the Maple Leafs. But do we have a thought on Campbell last night as we all await some type of return at some point, whether it's Marlies or they can do some salary cap juggling and get him in the Maple Leafs roster before the end of the season? Do we have a thought on Jack Campbell from last night, guys?
Let Stewie go first on old Jack Campbell. Go ahead, Stewie.
For me, I think he plays solid. You don't need spectacular. You need solid. I know I've been saying that a while now, but I think it's the timing of the save. And correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff. I think the where I judge his game, I think Suzuki scored to make it 3-1, and then there was a breakaway a short time later, and he made that stop where if he did not make that save, it would have been a turning point in the game. So that's where I judge him. It's the timing of the save.
Yeah, on Armia, on Yoel Armia.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's
so right. He stops that, and that shows that he's dialed in, and that's the type of save that the Maple Leafs have sort of been missing the last couple of months with Freddie Anderson, too. So that's the save that you need to get, and he made that. So I think that's sort of why he's sort of running away with this number one goaltender for now.
There was a stretch of games there. He played three games with like a, you know, an 840 and then a 500. He got pulled three goals and six shots, then like an 8-something as well. And that's what made all of Leaf Nation and our show mention Jack Campbell and potential issues and, oh my God, pull our hair out. But like every single goaltender every single year puts together three games of like not great goaltending. So I think it's a good sign that he's not going to let it snowball into something bigger that's easy to let happen in a bigger media market. And glad to see him back on his game. And yeah, as Stewie said, like, make the stops you got to make. He did that for them.
20 block shots by the Leafs last game as well.
What a gritty team. Grit for days.
Warriors. Before I ask this question, or before I put this out there, I want to ask you a question, Justin.
Is it Tuesday?
No, it's not Hot Take Tuesday.
I don't like green ice.
How much? Let's talk about rule changes, Justin. I got some controversial things I want to get off my chest. How much time do you want off the show today?
What?
How much time do you want off the show today? We have Gerard Gallant coming up at the bottom of the hour. How much do you want to talk in the next 15 minutes?
This feels like a trick question. There's three of us. I would like to talk for five of the 15 minutes before Gallant.
because I'm deciding whether I want to ask Stewie about the fourth line, knowing that if I do, you and I could probably go have a sandwich and a smoke.
That doesn't sound bad, actually. Sure.
All right, Stewie, fourth line, go.
Here we go. And I've been delegated the president of the Fourth Line Society, and this is the makings of a team that's poised to go, you know, all the way. And when you have a line that's just not out there, when I was on a fourth line, they used to call us the clock killers because we'd just be out there skating around and getting some puck possession time, basically giving the top two lines a blow. But when you now have a line that's contributing and you know, wearing down the other team's opposition, that's definitely, that's the making of a great, great team. And I think now Sheldon Keefe's sort of been now interchanging different combinations. But I think Adam Brooks, I think he's in that conversation now for a guy that is pretty valuable to this bottom six. And look at all the pieces that they were trying to plug in and out, VC, Boyd, Spezza in the middle, Pierre Engvall. So Brooks right now, he's playing some great, great hockey now. And I talked about it last night. He pushed Engvall into the press box. He pushed Spezza, who's a center, to the wing. He pushed Thornton, who's a center, to the wing. And to do that in a six-game period this year, that just shows how great of a player he is. So I know it's early. It's a small sample size. But the way that this fourth line is going right now, how do you break them up? And I know Riley Nash is coming back off injury. We don't know when he's coming back. But the way that this line is playing, this is the makings of a fourth line that does well in the playoffs. I could see them scoring a big goal, you know, late in a third period or tying the game early in the third period. So I like it. It makes me want to put on the equipment and come back and make a comeback because I love seeing fourth lines being productive. The end.
what I like about Brooks is that he's so smart, and like that is a super smart line between Thornton, Spezza, and Brooks. Like, just you would feel confident that they wouldn't have the, you know, the glaring errors that you don't want to see from your fourth line. Now, with that, we saw Travis Boyd come in and have a run of games where people went, how about Travis Boyd? You know, Jimmy Vesey had games where he scored a couple of goals and, you know, was a contributor for this team. So, yeah, you can't get too excited over a small run of good play, but there's no doubt that he has made things interesting and really raised the stakes for a guy like Pierre Engvall, another one of guys that Stewie is the president of the fan club of, where it may have to be, is this guy going to get in? And when he does, he's got to perform or he's going to get pushed out by Brooks. So that's a good thing, having that push from the backside of your roster.
But I think the difference with Brooks now and the other guys is he's not just trying to get rid of the puck. He has some puck poise. He's not afraid to make plays. And, you know, I remember I'm like, oh man, I got to dump this puck in or I'm going to be ending up in the press box for 10 games and just trying to get and chip and chase. But he's got some poise. He's not afraid to make plays. And I think he's got the confidence of his line mates. But I said I'm most impressed. It's almost as if he's been playing all season. He's only played 6 games. He's been in the press box pretty much all year on the taxi squad. So that's great for him. I like seeing guys get an opportunity and make the most of it.
You know, that list that you read off, Stewie, of all that of all those players on the fourth line as they continue to sort of mix and match, the one player that I think is most impressive through all of it, because both you guys played and you know what it's like when every day you've got different line mates and trying to build chemistry. Jason Spezza, man. Jason Spezza has been there all season long with this revolving door of players around him. And the production hasn't wavered. And the performance hasn't wavered. And there'll be nights where, okay, who's my line mate today? Okay, well, it wasn't the same as 2 games ago or even last game. And I'm Jason Spezza, and I'm just going to have to deal with that. To me, the most impressive thing, as much as we're talking a lot about Thornton and Adam Brooks lately, another goal yesterday from Brooks. To me, the story here, Justin, we'll start with you. To me, the story there is Jason Spezza. Everything around him revolving, everything changing, and he's the constant through all of it, keeps on going.
Yeah, I saw a list yesterday of top point getters among players who play less than 11 minutes per game. And it's like Jason Spezza has 26 points playing 10-something a night. The next guy is Matthew Joseph from Tampa, who has 18 points, so he's trailing him by 8 points. And below that, the next highest guy is like a dozen. You know, like to get that, the kind of output you're getting from Spezza, you're right, in a rotating role, various line mates playing different positions, just saying, you know, whatever you hand to me today, I'm going to make the most of it. That has been just such a boon for $700,000, league minimum, the guy's playing for.
Right?
What, this guy was available in waivers, and they were just like, don't pick him up because he'll quit. He'll quit, I promise. And everyone listened. It's insanity. They should have just claimed him and then made him retire to help their own teams. But it's a big gain for the Leafs.
Yeah, and what I like about this, he's a pro's pro, and it goes back to me. I remember I was only like 30, and I got healthy scratch. I'm like, I'm calling my agent, get me out of here, trade me right now. But here's a guy now that's a pro's pro and just goes about his business, is humble, and he has every right to be going against the grain and being in the media and saying this is a joke. But just think of all the adversity he had to go through, and with his resume, it just shows what type of person he is, and that's why I think he's going to have a future after the game doing whatever he wants. So for him to come in and accept this role for league minimum, I'm like, league minimum, that's my 407 bill that I got to pay every month. What the heck is that? I'm not playing for league minimum. After, you know, that illustrious career, that just shows what not just type of player he is, but what type of person he is, and there's not many like him. So all these other guys that are in the league that have that ego, look at a guy like Jason Spezza. You want to play, you know, 35, 36 and on, you got to now take a bit of a haircut and try to, you know, be like him for sure.
Does anyone know offhand what Spezza earned during his highest earning year?
$100 million.
Yeah. it just has to be something to like cash those weekly paychecks and be like, I don't know. It is, you're right. There's a good dose
of Switzerland. I tell this story. I quit in Switzerland because they scratched me one game. They told me I was going to play. I spent like $67 on a pregame meal in Switzerland for a bowl of spaghetti. I get to the arena. They scratched me. I packed my bags and I left like $40,000. Like, I don't care about this 40 grand. I'm out of here. Let me take my cheese. I'm gone. And I flew back to Toronto. That's how big of an ego that I had playing in Europe. So
Stu, do you look back at that and just be like, God, that was insane. What was
wrong? Yeah, I need my 40 grand. I'm going to send an email. Hey, about that 40 grand that you guys technically still owe me, but
I'm owed $600 from the ECHL, and I think about it every other day.
It's by the way, for most money in a season for Jason Spezza, as far as
I think it was 8.5,
eight and 08-09. From 08 to 13, he was making eight, and then he dropped down to get the AAV down 5 and 4, and then he signed the deal with the 4-year $30 million ticket with the Dallas Stars, so the AAV was 7.5.
When he was making 8, his bi-weekly was probably pretty close to 700 or whatever he's making right now, his league minimum.
Exactly.
That's pretty wild.
That is pretty wild. Real quick, we'll just move on to Vancouver. You know, enough about anything else about last night's game? Montreal, Toronto, 4-1. Anything for the Montreal side? I mean, I thought Nick Suzuki was, you know, kind of got highlighted there on the Matthews goal, but I thought Nick Suzuki had a strong game. Anything from the Habs point of view? Stuart, you were watching Cole Caulfield, I know, all night long, getting roasted by Mark Chouinard there early, but anything from him?
No, the NHL's hard, and again, people just expect guys to come in and light it up right away. Look at all the other guys, the rookies in the league now, 20, 30 games in, are still struggling and not really putting up points. So it's going to take time. I still think he's going to be a star in the league, you know, just based on what he did, you know, this year in college and in Laval. But it takes some time. So give him some time before you're writing him off as a bust.
Anything from Montreal point of view last night?
I think that's a good point by Stewie. It's you got to preach patience with your young guys. You know, you can't. It's not all going to come right away. The Leafs have seen that with a lot of their young guys. So exciting future, but again, just patience with a guy like Caulfield.
So tonight the Maple Leafs are back at it. Montreal has a night off. They'll play Winnipeg tomorrow. Leafs are at it tonight against the Vancouver Canucks. Vancouver, and man, Travis Green was giving it to his bench. I mean, Ottawa goes up 3-0 yesterday, and Travis Green goes full Joe McGrath. You're losing! Like, on all of these guys on the bench. That one's for you, Stu. He goes full Joe McGrath on everybody, and they end up losing to the Ottawa Senators 6-3. Brady Tkachuk with the Gordie Howe hat trick. Josh Norris with another goal. I know Vancouver's got a lot of games in hand on the Ottawa Senators, but right now, Vancouver's in last place in the North, and it just looks weird seeing the Ottawa Senators above anybody. But it looks very much like coming into Toronto, Vancouver looks like a tired team. Like the two games against the Maple Leafs coming out of the COVID situation, maybe you're just going on moxie and gumption and adrenaline. Who knows? But I don't know about this one for Vancouver. I know both teams are playing back-to-back, but man, Vancouver, normally you see a game like last night out of Vancouver in game two of the back-to-back, not in game one. Justin, what do you think about the Canucks Leafs tonight?
Well, I think if they're in a position where they're kind of mentally like, all right, we know we're done. It's going to be a rough ride home for this Canucks team. You know, it's been a tough year. The COVID thing was just a nightmare for that group, and they, you know, pulled themselves together to make a proud run when all eyes were on the games against the Leafs there. You know, now playing out the string here, it's going to be they're in a really tough spot. And feel for the guys. There were always going to be some teams just trying to get through this season, and more than ever, the Canucks look like a team who, let's not talk about playoffs. Let's talk about getting through the year healthy and happy and rebuilding towards next season.
Final thought to you, Stewie, Vancouver.
Yeah, it's tough. It's going to be interesting. Are they going to start Holtby or Demko? Demko's been playing good the last couple of games too. But I just want to now use this time to advocate for Brandon Sutter, he's got his ninth goal of the season last night. And you know, people are saying that he's done, but I'm going to say it right now: he will sign next year, and he'll sign probably on a contending team. And he will have, you know, probably a little bit of a haircut here, but he will be a productive member in the National Hockey League next year. I'm booking it now.
Yeah, like excellent it. Skater, no denying that. On that, we'll hit a break. Gerard Gallant will join us next, former bench boss for a number of teams around the NHL. Most recently, of course, the Vegas Golden Knights. He is now the head coach for the Canadian men's hockey team at the World Championships. The great Gerard Gallant joins us here in moments. Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program. Win last night for the Toronto Maple Leafs, 4-1 over the Montreal Canadiens. They clinch a playoff spot, the first to do so in the Scotia North. Tonight they'll face off against the Vancouver Canucks. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. We are pleased to be joined now by the head coach of the Canadian men's national team, the World Hockey Championships. He is the great Gerard Gallant. He joins us now. Gerard, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
Anytime, guys. I'm great. Thanks.
Hey, well, before we get into the World Championships and everything, let everyone know what you've been doing the last little while and how much NHL, if any, you've been watching.
Well, I've been in pretty much most of the time in Prince Edward Island, and then a little bit in Moncton, New Brunswick with the grandkids when we can get over. But, you know, the last 15 months, basically pretty much, like I said, playing a lot of poker with my buddies. Trying to play a little golf and a lot of time with the grandkids. So, and like you said, obviously you get the hockey patches and you're watching games till 1 a.m. and you start whenever they start in the afternoon at 7:30. So lots of hockey, lots of watching games and actually getting a little tired of it, to be honest with you.
And you want to get behind a bench, no doubt. I'm going to hand this over to Anthony here in a second, but you know, listen, you're a real sharp hockey mind. From what you've seen this year from the game, like, this is a really challenging season for everybody, certainly physically with a compressed schedule for a lot of teams. Mentally it is as well. What do you make of the hockey? Is there a different sort of flavor to it at all for Gerard Gallant this year?
You know, it's when you watch the game, there's, you know, some nights you watch it just as a fan and other nights you're watching it to do your work. And it just makes it real tough when you see they're starting to get some fans in the building now, and that's been real good. But when those buildings look so empty, it's just hard to get into the game. And even as a fan, you're watching, you say, it's just not the same. And it's really tough. And, you know, from watching it from afar, it just looks like every team goes through some lulls here and there. And it just, you know, and I don't think there's one team that hasn't had one, to be honest with you. Most teams go through it and you say, what's wrong with that team? And then the next night or the next week, you look at a team and you'll say, you know, that team has a chance to compete with the Stanley Cup. So it just seems like there's a lot of ups and downs. And it's got to be real tough mentally on the players for sure. But, you know, they're doing a good job. They're getting the games in. They're doing the best they can in this situation. And truthfully, I think the hockey's been real good.
Thanks for joining us. So have you been paying attention to some of the younger players in the league, especially now, I'm assuming, because the tournament's going to be in Latvia. There's going to be a lot of younger guys on this roster. So have you been paying attention to some of the younger guys throughout the league? And has anyone impressed you out of the younger class of the NHL?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know what it's going to shake down, Anthony, at the end of the day. But like you said, obviously we're watching a lot of younger players. And, you know, you look and I don't want to mention names because, you know, you don't look at anybody in your roster yet. But obviously there's a lot of good young hockey players in the National Hockey League, and there's a lot of them are Canadian players. And I think you're proud to represent your country. And even though it's a tough year, I still think, you know, people think we're going to have a tough time getting players. I don't see that. I think a lot of guys are going to want to come. They're going to battle hard for us. And, you know, anytime you can put that uniform on and, you know, the Canadian jersey on your chest, it's a great honor. And when they called me, I was really excited. Obviously, I haven't coached in 15 months, but it's a great opportunity. I'm looking forward to it. And again, anytime Team Canada calls, you're not going to say no.
I've got certainly my share of World Championship questions as well, but I am interested in you mentioning that you just have had the opportunity to watch hockey every night. You know, and when you're an NHL head coach, you watch your own team so much. I imagine you don't have much as much an opportunity to look around the league. Has there been any team or player, I guess more specifically team, that would has caught your eye as, you know, holy, I don't usually get to watch them all the time, but I like this or don't like this about a specific team's game?
You know what? I'm really, the last couple of years, I've been really impressed with Carolina, the way they're playing. You know, they got some talented players. They're a fast team. I like the way they play their game. Their systems are real good. And, you know, they've done really well. I mean, Florida this year has taken off, and they look like a, you know, a team that I thought wasn't going to be as good as they are. And, you know, they're playing real good hockey. So, you know, that's just a couple teams, you know, that I can think of. But definitely Carolina is a team that really caught my eye.
Absolutely. With Gerard Gallant, head coach of Team Canada for the World Hockey Championships. Seattle Kraken's on the horizon. Team 32 in the NHL. You handled an expansion team and took them to the Stanley Cup final. I don't know if you're going to be the coach there, but whoever it is, if they're talking to Gerard Gallant, what advice would you give the incoming, whoever it ends up being, head coach for the Seattle Kraken?
Well, I think you got to go in there and, like I said, I went into Vegas and, you know, we didn't know what the expectations were. There was no expectations. We came in there every day and we planned for the first day of training camp and we went from there. And we got on a roll and things, you know, the players got confident in themselves and they felt good about themselves. And, you know, there's no person in this world that thought we were going to go to the Stanley Cup Finals. And I was their coach and I, you know, I was hoping to win a hockey game. And then we just got on that roll and we had some good players and they believed in each other. And, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury stood in his head, obviously. He was an incredible goalie. But everybody that played for that team that year probably played a little better than people thought they were. And it was a challenge every night. So I went in there and I said from day one, I'm going to be myself. I'm going to be Gerard Gallant. Not going to try to be something different. We're going to go there. Mm-hmm. We're going to have some fun. We're going to have a good work ethic in the games. And, you know, come to the rink and enjoy it.
I wanted to go back to your time with St. John. Did you know that Huberdeau was going to be that good of a player in the National Hockey League? And just how good was he back then when you guys won back-to-back championships in the Q?
Yeah, I believed he was. I mean, we got him as a 16-year-old kid, as an underage kid, and I think he was a buck 35 or a buck 40. He was nothing to him, but his talent level and his compete level, and, you know, he wanted to win those pucks, and he wouldn't win any battles the first year, but his skill level got him to that next level. And then he comes in the next year as a 17-year-old, and he's a dominant player. Like, he was a dominant player in the league. But, you know, I just seen the drive in the kid. Every day at practice, he wanted to win. He wanted to finish first. He wanted to score on the goalies. And, you know, we had some great players on that Sea Dog team. I mean, there's probably five or six good NHLers, and they competed with each other every day, and they really pushed each other. But, no, there's no doubt in my mind. And, you know, I'm really happy to see Jonathan, you know, be one of the best, probably the top 15 players in the NHL today.
Gerard, once you're handed a world championship roster, how do you go about kind of indoctrinating everyone to your systems, to getting everyone to understand, like, the way you want to play? Like, do you email out video packages? What is the process of getting everyone on the same page in such a short time span before you play competitive hockey?
Yeah, and you know, I don't put a whole lot into that. Obviously, there's going to be a bunch of guys come from different teams, so they're going to have some different systems. We're going to put a simple package together that every player in the National Hockey League played before. They're going to go out there, they're going to work hard, they're going to, you know, they're going to execute, and they're going to, you know, have some team speed. And we're going to play an aggressive forechecking game. We're going to be an offensive team that's going to, you know, let's like the other teams worry about Canada, you know. And I think we're going to, again, we'll have some real good hockey players at you know, young players, older players, but we're going to have some good players. And I think every time we go over there, the teams are so worried about us, we can't get caught up in worrying about what they're going to do. We're going to play our game. I'm going to play our game with G, and we'll put a tech package together for them. And I'm sure on the plane, 9.5-hour trip over there, they can look at it. But, you know, I'm more worried about and get them on the ice, have 3 days of practice, and we'll be fine.
You know, and with Gerard Gallant, head coach for Team Canada at the World Hockey Championship, someone that you'll be sharing the bench with is someone that's been synonymous with you for a number of years. And listen, I have all day. I have all the time in the world for Mike Kelly and a tremendous amount of respect for him. What do you think fans should know about Mike Kelly? Sell him into our listeners right now.
Well, Mike Kelly's he's my right hand. I mean, you know, he's a guy that I've been with for, I don't know, 10, 11 years now, from the St. John Sea Dog days right up till Florida Panthers, Las Vegas Golden Knights. And, you know, as a coach, it's not about, you know, sometimes it's always a head coach, but Mike Kelly's a big part of what I do. Mike Kelly's, you know, he'll do the power play, he'll do the penalty kill him, whatever I ask of him. If I'm not there one day, if you're homesick for 2 or 3 days, I have nothing to worry about. They're going to go to the rink. They're going to do what I'm going to have. You know, he's going to do the system we do. He's going to run our practices for us. Mike Kelly can do anything I want. And he's a great friend, and, you know, he's an excellent coach. And like I said, a lot of people, he doesn't get a lot of credit. But with me, you know, he's part of our package, and I really enjoy what he does for us.
Want to mention as well, Andre Tournier is going to be on the bench with you guys as well. We watch him coach. Listen, we've seen him coach the World Juniors, the Ottawa 67s as well. He's sort of one of those guys that's also ticketed to bigger and better things, perhaps, in the hockey world. What should we know from your point of view about Andre Tournier?
Well, I met Andre my first year in St. John. It was the first time I met him. And he called us up, myself and Mike, and he said, "You guys are big shots coming from the pros." He said, "Us guys in the Quebec League, we work real hard." He said, "But I know all the players in this league." And he said, "You guys can trust me. If you need to know something about the players in the Quebec League, call me and I'll let you know." So, you know what? He was a guy that's a loyal guy, an honest guy. And we really appreciated that phone call we got from him 10 or 11 years ago. So, just as a solid guy. He loves his players. The World Junior last year, you could see how much passion he had in the bench, and he loves the love for the game. But he's a guy that works hard. He breaks down the video. He works really, really hard, and it's good to have a guy like him on our bench.
You went from coaching Roberto Luongo now to working with him, as now he's been named the GM of Team Canada. Did you see future executive on his resume when you were coaching him?
No, well, you know what? Maybe an owner, the money he made over his career, something like that. and Lou said it the other day. He said he liked playing the fantasy football and all that. That's how he picked his team. So that's how he sort of got into management. So, no, I think Lou's a very intelligent guy. You know, goaltenders, they seem to be all over the place in, you know, broadcasting and management. So I think he'll do an excellent job. And like I said, I was pretty excited when he gave me the call and he asked me if I was interested in being the coach. So, you know, I was, thankful for that from Lou. But Lou's a great person. He'll do a good job. And, you know, a lot of respect around the National Hockey League, obviously, when he's talking to these players. And Shane Doan also, you know, great guy.
Jared, do you think there's, I'm struck by your comments just about, like, you know, for systems and these players, you're not going to overcomplicate it. You keep it simple. Do you think there are people around the NHL that overcomplicate this stuff? And is it best sometimes to just trust the players? I guess what I'm asking is it more about systems or is it more about execution when it comes to having a successful hockey team?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. Obviously, you have to have your systems in place, you know, but you also got to let – for me, when you watch games at night, you know, there's – every coach in the National Hockey League has their systems. It's about the players executing them. And, you know, any given night, you're sometimes you make mistakes and they happen, but there's no team in the NHL that I look out there and say, well, they don't know what they're doing. They got no systems. It's just about execution and, you know, the skill level some nights, the other team's that much better. So I think whatever systems you put into place, I don't think the system is going to change a whole lot. I mean, you'll watch games and you'll see everybody jamming in the defensive zone and they're blocking shots now. So, It's not a big difference. I mean, there might be a small adjustment between periods or something like that, but there's not big differences in the way teams play. You know, sure, a little bit more offensive on one team than another, but and some teams play a little bit more defensive. But to me, when you watch games, it's not a big difference.
Gerard, I want to end on this one. There's an old saying: use hockey, don't let hockey use you. And through hockey, you've been able to travel plenty, whether it's in junior hockey, the NHL, world championships. I mean, you're there in 07 and 17 as an assistant, now with Team Canada in a head coaching capacity off to Riga. Of all the places that hockey has taken you, what are some of your favorites? Like, what has hockey allowed you to do and allowed you to see?
You know what? I've been pretty fortunate. Like you said, I never had a job besides hockey all my life as a player and as a coach. And I just think it's not just about me. I mean, my family's been treated good from hockey. You know, world championships were great. I did that 3 times. I brought my brother over 1 year. and it was a highlight, you know, highlight of his life. He had an unbelievable 10 days and a chance to bring your kids and your family to world championships. So, you know, Stanley Cup finals in Vegas a couple of years ago. I mean, my family was up there for that. It's just an incredible experience. So the game of hockey has been really good to me and a lot of fun. And like I said, hopefully get back at it soon here.
Well, listen, we'll let you go on that. Good luck at the tournament. Good luck here with Team Canada. We wish you all the success and look forward to seeing you back in the NHL sooner than later. We know that will happen. Gerard, thanks so much for this. Always appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Thank you. Take care.
Gerard Gallant, head coach for Team Canada at the upcoming World Hockey Championships. It is a saying that I can't remember who told that to me, but it is something that's always stuck with me. It's advice that I've always given, Justin. Don't let hockey use you. Make sure you use hockey to do it. Because I'm sure you've seen plenty of people that have been completely used up by hockey. They get on the stream and hockey takes them places without them thinking, hold on a second here. I have options and I can actually use hockey to do something with my life, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. It's tough to tell when it's happening, you know, when you're in it. But, you know, there's certainly a lot of former players who would tell you that they have some regrets about how the game handled them or their experience with it. So being willing to walk away and comfortable without it, it's almost like a good relationship or whatever. Is being able to find yourself within it is very important. So it sounds like Gallant is a guy who's managed that balance very well.
And Stewie, hockey lets you get to the KHL.
Yeah, it did. But I propose for the PA, the National Hockey League, now to open up an NHLPA hockey school where every former hockey player can go and work and make a minimum of $75,000. That would solve a lot of problems for hockey using the players.
So these guys then, so what you're proposing then is the PA puts together a structure where the ex-players become essentially skills coaches?
Absolutely.
Everyone's skills. That's not a bad idea. That's a really good idea. Why are you sharing this for free here right now?
Yeah, the money parents can't influence you if you already got money, right? That's another conversation.
Point.
Let's go to break here.
The money parents. I love that those exist.
I want to ask you one thing, Stewie, specifically. We showed the highlight yesterday. Sergei Tolchinsky scoring. Omsk wins the Gagarin Cup, the KHL championship. Bob Hartley's a coach. Ilya Kovalchuk is on the team. Alexei Emelin, etc. When you see because you went... We've talked about this, but like you went to the KHL and everybody comes back with story. When you see the KHL now, what do you think?
It's funny. The first thing that went through my mind, I'm like, I wonder what their bonus structure is going to be for winning. And they're probably going in the dressing room and collecting their like $150,000 cash for winning. And that has been some of the stories where the owner will come down with cash and you go there in the cash counter and they hand you your money in your envelope and you go on your way. So KHL is a different beast, but I wouldn't change that life experience for the world. But it's different. It's different, different.
That is a consistent story amongst everybody who's ever gone through that experience. We'll step away. More Hockey Central here in a couple of moments. Leafs and Vancouver Canucks. We'll talk that up next as Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Thanks for Gerard Gallant for stopping by. We're back in a moment. All right, welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon. Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne. Before we get to a quick couple of thoughts before the top of the hour and Smith and Jones on the Vancouver Canucks Maple Leafs matchup, Stewie, I know you wanted to park some time talking about one person specifically. We've seen Tim Stützle all season long. We've seen Alexis Lafreniere all season long. And now we're finally starting to see Quentin Byfield, the second overall draft pick, makes his debut with the Los Angeles Kings last night against the Anaheim Ducks. So he's in the league, and he's here to stay for a long time. Your thoughts on Q?
It's about time, but I watched actually the third period of that game. Just his poise with the puck and coming out of the minors and not really being intimidated. His game translated from the minors where he had 20 points in 30 games, and he had the game on his stick late in the game to tie it up. So I think he's going to have a long, long career. He's going to be a star in this league. Congratulations, Quentin Byfield, on your first NHL game. A lot more, many more games to come for sure.
Former first overall draft pick in the OHL, played with the Sudbury Wolves before that, shout out OMHA and the York Simcoe Express, and that's where I saw him, and man, was he ever dominant. Like, I think the example that I raised to you last night on TV was, I remember the first time I saw him, he looked like a combination of Joe Thornton when he played with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds and Yevgeny Malkin. Like, that's how Byfield took over games was just outstanding. Justin, do you have a thought on Quentin Byfield making his debut last night? Did you watch much of that?
Not Justin? A Byfield fan.
Well, I'm sorry, I was on mute. Sorry. No. I do have a thought, and I didn't get to watch that game, but just on development, like, you know, yep. Stewie mentioned, you know, it's overdue for him to get in the league, and that's great. I do think it's really cool that this year some of these guys got the opportunity at 19 years old to play in the American League. You know, under the old restrictions, he would have had to play junior up until now. So I think he's one of the guys who really benefited from the way this season shook out. Got to play games against men and now step in.
That is such a great point. And the CHL-NHL agreement, I think they'll extend it, or maybe they already have, for one more season where 19-year-olds can't go to the American League. But man, if you look like even like on that Ontario Reign team, like someone like Artur Kaliev, for example, like all these guys, like these 19-year-olds who do not look out of place at the American Hockey League level and what that does for their development. I know there's a lot of junior hockey operators right now probably listening to this saying, don't take our 19-year-olds now, especially not the elite ones, because that's how we build our programs. But I wonder about the nature of the next agreement between the NHL and the CHL. And you can be assured there will be a number of NHL teams that are saying, you know what, these guys are ready earlier than ever. And don't be surprised if there's a lot of push, because there's a lot of talk about it once, but then when it came time to the vote, it was like, nah, leave the 19-year-olds in the CHL. Man, I wonder about it now. And I think Byfield's an excellent example of teams that are saying, yeah, this might be a better spot for some of these 19-year-old kids right now. Before we go, Vancouver, Toronto tonight, Justin Bourne, and we'll finish on Stewie's thought. Go.
We'll see if the Canucks can salvage something. They look like they're out of gas and probably out of gas on the season.
Yeah, not an easy game or just a mail-it-in game. You got to come in, play your game, hopefully get the win. Go Leafs, go.
There you go. On behalf of Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne, our producer, Matt Marchese, thanks for joining us. Smith & Jones next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.